This is Gulf Coast Life. I'm Mike Canary. Thanks for joining us. According to local health professionals, older adults are increasingly vulnerable to addiction and co-occurring mental health issues, especially in recent years. Substance abuse, most commonly alcohol, but also prescription drugs like opioids, doesn't necessarily indicate a mental health condition, but they can often be connected. Factors seniors face include boredom from the loss of routine that comes with a career or the loss of an identity that went along with that career, experiencing loss of friends and loved ones at a higher rate than younger people, and most crucially, social isolation. But experts say ageism is also a factor, both from doctors who might overlook signs of depression to friends and family members who might write off excessive drinking or drug use as just something an older person has the right to enjoy at a later stage of their life. To get a sense of what lies behind these factors and what treatment options are out there and what families and caregivers should watch out for and how they can support loved ones seeking help, I spoke last week with someone from the Hazelden Betty Ford Clinic in Naples. Let's hear that now. Terry Gerlach is a supervisor of clinical services at the Hazelden Betty Ford Mental Health and Addiction Treatment Center in Naples. Welcome to the show, Terry.
Thank you for having me, Mike.
So for starters, just tell us a bit about yourself and your background.
Sure. Mike, I am originally from Chicago and spent about 30 years in the corporate banking world and decided that I really wanted to make a career change to bring a little bit more purpose and meaning in my life. I do have a family history of mental health and substance use issues. So that's what really drew me to the field. And I was able to go back to graduate school, complete my internship, and begin my second career as a counselor and now supervisor of clinical services. And it's really my passion to be able to see people walk through their recovery journey from the moment they walk in the door when they may be feeling insecure and hurting to a person who emerges as confident in their recovery. And I love hearing from clients who are celebrating recovery milestones. I'll occasionally get calls from clients saying 1 year today, 2 years today, and it really is a very fulfilling profession.
That's interesting that you came to it later in your life. How long ago was that pivot?
So that pivot was I graduated in 2019, so I started that pivot in about 2015. So I was considered an adult learner in the graduate school, and I came to realize that retirement looks different for everyone. And for me, it looked like just a different career.
Do you think, I'm kind of off track here, but that's okay. Do you think that coming to it later, you know, after having a career that was different, do you think that gives you a different perspective for what you do?
It absolutely does, Mike, because when we work with older adults, many of them have retired, some from a very prestigious position. And once they retire, they lose that identity. And I have that background to be able to tell them you can reimagine your future any way you want it to look. That can mean volunteering or mentoring or perhaps finding a second career of their own, but that life as they know it does not have to end once they hit that button of retirement.
Very interesting. And I think that that will come up in a little bit when I start asking you about some of the reasons why there is the issues that we're here to discuss. But first, tell us what the Hazelden Betty Ford Center is and does, just like if you met somebody at a cocktail party and you tried to describe the services that you guys provide.
Yeah. So we, Hazelden Betty Ford, we celebrated our 75th anniversary last year. We are headquartered in Center City, Minnesota, and we have 14 locations in multiple states across the country. And we do focus both on substance use and mental health. We started off really as a provider of substance use disorder counseling. And we soon realized that we couldn't treat substance use and mental health in two separate silos. It just doesn't work. So we now have an integrated program that includes both substance use and mental health. And the reason for that, Mike, is that we know from all of the research that it is rarely about the drink or the drug. There is something going on that is causing these people to self-medicate some of those mental health symptoms. So by treating them at the same time under the same umbrella gives them a much better chance of recovering from both.
So we got a press release from you all that said health professionals are seeing rising rates of substance use and untreated or unaddressed mental health conditions among seniors. So let's get into that. Can you characterize what you're seeing and where the trend line appears to be heading? You know, is this an issue or problem that's getting worse, I guess, is the question.
I would say that it has become progressively worse over time because we know that older adults are much less likely to be properly diagnosed and treated. So if they go to their primary care provider and there are some physical symptoms that might be appearing, elevated liver enzymes, other issues that might suggest that there is a substance use problem, oftentimes primary care physicians don't really take that all that seriously. Well, you're older, you're drinking a little bit more, you probably should cut down. And they kind of leave it at that without really diving in and addressing the fact that, okay, this could be a real issue that can be addressed and can be managed to get them back on track to where they want to be in their lives.
That's where the ageism comes in, because that was another thing that the press release said, I guess.
Absolutely. And Mike, this this quote from the American Psychological Association has always stayed with me because it is kind of heartbreaking. But they do say that ageism is one of the last socially acceptable prejudices in our country. And yeah, it takes many forms. When we think of ageism, these are what we call microaggressions and subtle, indirect ways that people are dismissing older adults in our society. You know, I had someone in a treatment environment who was well into his 70s, and it was a general population group. And when he introduced himself, one of the younger people said, I don't know what you're even doing here. When I'm your age, you know, why not? Let's just drink. And I think that is, you know, one of those slights that, you know, has older adults oftentimes buying into those negative stereotypes. Stereotypes like, well, you could never do virtual services because, you know, you're technology challenged. Or you couldn't do evening program because, well, you probably don't drive well at night. So all of these assumptions, which have been debunked in so many ways, but still continue to be true. The reality is that most older adults can function very well, well into their mid-80s and beyond. But then there are others that do struggle from those, you know, cognitive, emotional, and physical complications that make their lives more difficult.
If we're talking about increasing rates of substance use, are we mostly talking about alcohol, or is it other substances, prescription drugs, non-prescription drugs, cannabis, things like that?
Yes, great question. So alcohol is the most common drug of choice. It is followed by opioid medications, whether they are purchased legally or from outside sources. And then you're exactly right, cannabis follows shortly thereafter. But I would say for probably 60% of them, alcohol is the primary drug of choice.
What would you say is behind the increase? I mean, I kind of made a list of things that, you know, we're dealing with as a society. Lingering pandemic struggles, tense political climate, economic strain, and the world's just getting super complicated, you know, almost like input overload these days, especially for an older person, I would think.
Yes, absolutely. And there are other risk factors that make them more vulnerable. You know, they do experience losses more frequently than the general population. And when we talk about losses, the loss of loved ones, so family members, spouses, friends, they also have that loss of identity that we kind of referred to earlier in terms of, okay, I was this high-powered executive, and now I'm just this retired guy. So having to really grasp the fact that they no longer have an identity that defined them in the past. So we try to come up with ways to, you know, kind of bolster a new identity for them. And, you know, they also experience a loss of freedom. Many of them are for whatever reason, having to move out of their homes and perhaps into assisted living or a smaller living arrangement. They may no longer have their driving privileges. You know, there may be some social isolation going on. And then finally, physical health complications always play a role as a potential risk factor.
It could also just be, I would think, just having so much time on their hands, whether they had an identity they lost or not, they just suddenly don't have a routine to stick to.
Absolutely. Yeah, that structure, accountability, purpose is all kind of bundled into identity for older adults.
I would like to take a moment to reintroduce my guest. Terry Gerlach is a supervisor of clinical services at the Hazelden Betty Ford Mental Health and Addiction Treatment Center in Naples. Local health professionals report seeing rising rates of substance use and untreated mental health conditions among seniors. So we're exploring why older adults are increasingly vulnerable to addiction and co-occurring mental health issues, and how ageism in healthcare can contribute to missed diagnoses and delayed treatment. If you'd like to engage with the show about this topic or any of our episodes, find us on our social media. We are WGCU Public Media on Instagram and Facebook. I use that term co-occurring mental health conditions. Can you explain what that means?
So co-occurring conditions are when someone has a substance use problem as well as a mental health problem. So those two issues are what we call co-occurring, meaning coexisting, happening at the same time. And we talked about some of the issues related to substance use, and we'd kind of like to focus a little bit on mental health because this really is an area where older adults are very much undiagnosed and untreated, specifically as it relates to depression. So we do know that depression affects, we want to say, about 17 to 25% of older adults. We think that number is underestimated. But depression is almost always dismissed when they are talking to people like primary care providers or even other family members, that depression is dismissed as just a symptom of normal aging and not a clinical diagnosis.
So, yeah, you mentioned like maybe your liver enzymes were a little off or something like that, but depression is something that is, it probably, you can't, there's no blood test for it. So
right.
it's up to the primary care physicians to be more attuned to it.
More attuned to it and understanding the gravity of it. We do know, Mike, that late life depression creates a high risk for cognitive issues among older adults. And also, it is the single largest percentage of suicide risk among older adults. So depression is serious, and it kind of relates to some of those issues that we talked a lot about before. But social isolation and those ageism myths really contribute to high rates of depression among older adults.
Is this to some degree a generational thing? And by that, I mean younger people these days are drinking less, but baby boomers lived lives that were focused more on alcohol and drug use. I mean, they were the hippies back in the day. Does the wheel turn, and we're currently in the turn of the wheel that is the baby boomers?
I think that is absolutely the case. And I think in addition to that, those baby boomers are living longer, right? So they're getting into those older years in increasing numbers. So people who are seeking help for their disorders well into their 80s. I have a client that's currently in my older adults group who is 86 years old, and he wants to spend the rest of his remaining time being able to live his life to the fullest and not, you know, being limited by those substance use and mental health concerns.
When somebody comes to Hazelden needing help, can you break down the difference between staying there versus virtual versus groups that they can attend, just sort of the spectrum of the kinds of interactions people would have who are seeking recovery?
That's a great question, because you're right. There are multiple levels of treatment that people can engage in, and it really is based upon the severity of their symptoms. So we start with residential treatment. That is an environment where they stay with us on site 7 days a week and attend programming continuously. So that the continuous monitoring and really what we call clinical management. And then they can step down to the next level of care, which is either called partial hospitalization or day treatment, depending upon the treatment provider. And that's when they are with us 5 days a week. The programming is like from 8:30 to 3:30 in the afternoon, and they may or may not stay on site with us. They have their option of doing that. Then the next level would be intensive outpatient, which meets either 3 or 4 times per week. Those intensive outpatient sessions are 3 hours, and it allows them to start taking some self-management of, starting to actively use those coping skills, engaging in a recovery support group. And then finally, for people to just stay connected enough, we do offer outpatient programming, and that's once per week for 90 minutes. So at that point, their conditions are more self-managed. We bolster that with individual therapy, psychiatry, and those recovery support groups. So it goes from increasingly intense to less and less intense as they progress in their recovery journey.
What should family members, loved ones, and caregivers be watching out for with older people who are in their lives to have some sort of indication that maybe there's something they should be worried about?
So there are some criteria that I think they really do need to be mindful of. So they can see their older adults are maybe drinking in larger amounts and for longer amounts of time. They might see that their loved one has tried to stop or control their use and has not been able to. So they're starting to see some social and interpersonal problems. So that's when we start to see that isolation. They stop engaging in some of the activities that they previously enjoyed. So someone who, for example, was playing golf twice a week suddenly discharges from his golf club. Someone who had an ongoing appointment with a group of friends for coffee every Wednesday, suddenly they're not going to that. So just seeing that their activities are reducing, their interests are reducing, and their lack of motivation.
Yeah, that sounds like either trying to hide your substance use or just depression in general when you break your routines and stop doing the things that you love to do.
Absolutely. And the other thing to keep in mind, Mike, in terms of what family members can do, they are in a tough position, right? Because suddenly the script has changed from them kind of parenting their parents, if you will. So they tend to take a little bit more of a directive approach, which is wonderful in terms of getting someone engaged to treatment. But once the older adult enters treatment, this is the time to validate the effort. So bringing up past grievances, bringing up, I knew you had a problem. It's not the time for that. This is the time to say, hey, great work. It took a lot of courage to do this. I know you can do it.
In other words, don't try to solve your 20-year-old problem during this time.
Yes, exactly. And just validating them and encouraging them to say, you're doing the right thing and we're proud of you.
Does technology fit into this equation at all? And I mean by that, being able to stay connected to other people using technology that might help with some of the isolation?
Absolutely. For people who are not comfortable driving or don't have driving privileges. Some of the online recovery support is like a lifeline to them. So we do offer virtual services, but also in the outside community. So when we talk about AA and NA and other 12-step programs, they have online meetings that are easily accessed.
You mentioned at the beginning that you started doing this right around the time the pandemic happened. And I think I'm correct in saying that the pandemic changed the ability to provide these kinds of services online in a pretty significant way. Is that correct?
That's absolutely true. And it really gave us the opportunity to see different ways that virtual services can be of benefit. Certainly during COVID, you know, outside of a residential treatment environment, all of our services had to be virtual. So we were able to come up with unique and interactive ways for virtual treatment to work. And that means, you know, attention span issues, right? So mixing it up with TED Talks and inspirational videos and podcasts to make sure that we're keeping the attention for, let's say, a 3-hour intensive outpatient group. But it also gave us the opportunity now to see how virtual services can be beneficial on so many different levels. People who don't live in close proximity to a treatment center, people who suffer from social anxiety are much more comfortable in a virtual world. And one thing that COVID taught us as well, Mike, is that it has made older adults more technology adept. They're doing FaceTime and Zoom videos with their family members. And, you know, I during COVID, people were attending church services virtually. So I think in some ways that COVID pointed us in the direction to provide those virtual supports that weren't previously available.
And we're talking on Zoom right now, which we take for granted these days, but back in 2018 or 2019, only a few of us knew what Zoom even was.
Absolutely.
Well, we're pretty much out of time. I just want to give you one last chance to, you know, give advice to people who are listening as to what they should be mindful of with their loved ones.
The best thing that people can do for a loved one who is struggling is ongoing communication, including them in decision-making issues related to family members, such as, you know, their grandchild is trying to figure out what college to go to. You know, any of those major decisions, make them feel included. Try to look for those signs of social isolation. Look for those signs of depression and anxiety, and certainly looking for signs of substance use. And I think the bottom line really for me is that it is never too late to address your underlying issues, be they substance use or mental health. There is always help available, and there is a fulfilling life in recovery waiting on the other side.
Terry Gerlach is a supervisor of clinical services at the Hazelden Betty Ford Mental Health and Addiction Treatment Center. Terry, thank you so much for your time and for your insights on this.
Thank you for having me, Mike. I sure appreciate it.
If you or someone you know of any age are having thoughts of harming yourself, call or text the Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 988. Veterans can call 988 and immediately press 1. If you missed any of the show, you can always hear episodes in their entirety on our website or wherever you find podcasts. Our show today was produced by Emma Rodriguez and yours truly. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Mike Canary. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.